Hey, here we go. It is 8 past the hour, 12. Chad Hartman, Dave Harrigan, News Talk 830 WCCO. Plenty of good stuff to get to, but I am not in a good spot today. And this is a transparency show. And there are things that we don't talk about, but there are things we do talk about in the show. And I appreciate immensely a number of things. Anytime people listen to us at all. And also, I've been stunned how candid and honest people have been through phone calls or emails or texts about what is going on in their life. And we're going to have plenty of fun. And we're going to have our normal Friday regulars. Majors, you know, 25 minutes away. Shaletta, 105. Dave with Am I Wrong, 235. And Matthew Collar. We've got a lot of good stuff with Collar on, well, the bigger games tonight, but it's a pretty big game on Sunday, too. Right? The Lynx, obviously, the biggest game. And Matt is very knowledgeable on the WNBA. And then we have the Vikings and Lions. I'm going to start with my youngest son, and then I'll get to my father. My youngest son, until yesterday, had his last seizure in early October of 2023. My son Quentin is a 23-year-old. He has a genetic syndrome called DIRC-1A. More individuals through testing are being identified with DIRC-1A. When Quinny first was diagnosed, and it took a long time, it was almost 20 years of his life before we had a specific name to the condition he was facing. I would say when Quentin was diagnosed, there was 200 to 300 people on the planet. Now I think it's maybe around 700, 800. The number of individuals in our society, in our country, throughout the globe, who have a rare disease, I think would shock a lot of people at how high it is. So Quentin, on February 13th of 2017, had his first seizure. He had a grand mal seizure. He had had double leg surgery. In late November 2016, he would not walk for 6 months because of other issues related to his syndrome. And we were there to see about his bone growth. We were there to have an adjustment with his bracing and his casts. And Kathleen and I were sitting. He's on the bench that we've all been on for doctor's visits. And all of a sudden, I noticed something was wrong. And by the time I got to him, his head was falling back and his eyes rolled back. And it was the only grand mal seizure he's ever had. And I did not know if my son was going to die right in front of my eyes at that point. I certainly was aware of seizures, but this went on for, well, it felt like it went on for an eternity. And it started just a different change in our life. And we thought it was possible that maybe it was one-off. And then at one point, a few months later, he's in what's become his office of my house. And I heard this horrible thump because he'd had a seizure and fallen to the ground. And then all sorts of testing, and he's an epileptic. What could be setting it off? Is it tied? Well, at the time, he wasn't diagnosed with DIRC-1A. And a lot of different medications for epilepsy. I guarantee you there are a high percentage of people listening, whether it's a family member, friend, coworker, know someone who suffers seizures. And there have been stretches where Quentin did not have one. There were stretches where he was having one basically once a week. And I know, in this case, in some ways, we are fortunate because there are people in our, all across the globe, where they might have 50 to 100 a day. Or they might have 10 to 15 a day. Or it's every day. And it's hard for me to feel fortunate I mean, I am immensely lucky to have all three of my sons. And I tell Quentin every day, at some point, how much do I love you? And he tells me, to infinity and beyond. There's no greater joy. And that doesn't mean I love Q any more than I love Hunter and Griffin, because I love them all the same. So we've tried medications with success. We've tried medications also where his whole personality was hollowed out, or where a kid who's never angry was angry. And until yesterday, we were over a year. And you're going to feel optimistic. And there's data about young boys and girls where they can grow out of their seizures. And obviously, the further along you get, the more hopeful. Maybe you're realistic, maybe you're unrealistic. And there's a big project in my life right now, and part of it was a room dedicated to him, and he had another seizure. And again, for anybody out there who's listening, who's a parent or a brother or sister of individuals who have seizures every day, my great sympathy. There are people out there who have significantly greater health issues than Q. There are people who are battling cancer. There are people battling you name it. But as I said, I try to be as honest as possible. And, you know, it's a bit soul-crushing when, you know, Quentin's never going to spend a second of his life living on his own. You know, and I have just an incredible relationship with his mom. You know, we're no longer married. We haven't been married for a long time. We talk every day. She is one of the greatest human beings I've met in my entire life. And I can't imagine a second of my life if I wouldn't have bumped into Kathleen the moment I walked out of my car at then WDGY when I said, well, this job is going to change my life. I talk to myself all the time. I still do. And I got my car, and I was really excited for the Wolves job. I wasn't as excited for the talk show because I had no interest. I never thought one time about hosting a talk show, even though I thoroughly loved growing up and listening primarily to Joe and Pat. And then you know who I'm going to get to in a second. And it's just deflating, right? And he brings me unmatched joy. And he makes me laugh. And he changed my life. I was about to broadcast the Arizona Cardinals along with the Wolves while doing afternoon drive, and all that changed, and I would do it a million out of a million times. So there are just certain parts of life that hit you hard, and they're deflating. And he hasn't even woke up yet today outside his medicine. It just completely wears him out. And he's involved in Special Olympics bowling right now with his friends, and it's talks about it 15 times a day, how excited he is. And then today, on this day, 2020, about an hour and 35 minutes from now, my father passed away. I've told the story before. I'll tell it really quick. On October 17th, it's Patrick Gracie's birthday. Patrick just turned 79. The most talented columnist this town has ever seen. My father's the most recognized. My father's is the hardest working. He's the most legendary. Patrick's talent is unparalleled. He would be a brilliant columnist anywhere on the planet. I hope people appreciate Patrick's skill. And also, he's one of just a phenomenal person, too. You might think, you don't like what he writes. There are certain people in all of our lives who are kind of just jerks. Pat Ricey's a sweetheart of the human being, and Dave knows that 100%. I tried to get my father on the 17th of 2020 through Lacey. I wanted Lacey to record my father saying happy birthday to Patrick, whether it was video or whatever, because my father was so rarely about of the public then, because we were in the middle of COVID. And it was getting maybe a little better, But I was not letting him leave the house because he couldn't hear without the hearing aids. He was a lip reader. And at the time then, if you were sick and you go to a hospital, nobody could join you. That would have been just torture for him. And Lacey told me it's not good, just a bad day. And then at about 2 in the morning, I realized Lacey called me and she basically screamed at me, get here now. We don't live that far apart. And I raced over to his house and Sheldon Burns was there, our doctor, and he says it's not going to be long. And I go sit by him and soon he recognizes me. And because he was going to fight as long as possible, he starts telling me about this business transaction we're involved in, Dave. Starts saying, don't trust, fill in the blank. And I just start laughing. And Sheldon and his wife and Lacey are just giving me space. And they're like, why are you laughing? I go, come over here. It wasn't clear, but could hear. And all of a sudden, his oxygen level went from like dangerously low to normal. And I stayed there with him the entire time. I'm dating Carla at the time. She's calling. She's freaking out. Why did I leave in the middle of the night? She eventually comes over. Then the whole family comes over. And he was doing well. At one point, Sheldon looks at me because the Vikings were playing. Of course, he had a column in the paper today.
Naturally.
Why not?
The Vikings were not doing well that day.
No, the Vikings were crushed that day.
Yeah.
Right? And Sheldon goes, listen, it's about time where I will either stay here because you know how much I love your entire family or go. And I go, is he going to make it today? He goes, no. I go, you know what you told me like 7 hours ago? He goes, he's not going to make it past today. I said, just go. Lacey and I can handle it. If we need to, we'll call paramedics. And so at about Lacey and I were kind of stepping away. By then we had my boys there, Kathleen's there, other family members that are there. And at some point it was clear that the time was getting close. And so I gathered everybody around. I said, I'm just going to talk. And I talked for about 5 minutes and I finished. And I told him how lucky I was to have him as my dad. And I loved him. And he has not spoken. He has not really moved in hours. And Quentin, Hunter and Griffin's life, he just leans a little bit forward in his chair and says, I love you too. And then I played one of his favorite songs ever. And then 2 minutes after the song, he would pass away. And that was 4 years ago. It was like a movie. So to have Q have that seizure yesterday and then have this day, and that doesn't mean today I'm not going to laugh and have fun and you can needle me, you can criticize me. But there are certain days where life hits you harder. So today is one of them. So I'd like you to do this for me. Send me a text and tell me when you think of my father, what comes to mind. I'd prefer if you didn't blast him today. Right? But I'm not going to block you if you do. I might block you if you use offensive words. But that's the policy anyway. When you think of my father, not just here, but the Tribune and everything. And the timing obviously is unique too because we're having the 100-year celebration of this radio station on Monday. So when you think of my father, what comes to mind? We'll read a bunch of your texts when we come back. What do you have? StylesFinancial.com, talk and text lines, 651-461-9226.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, you know who this is. You know the song. If you guessed Dave Harrigan's bumper music theme, maybe you've got it already. Trust me, it's not going to be Michael Jackson.
No.
Okay.
You don't have it already.
Okay, so don't even call, Dave says.
No, you can try.
The bumper music theme, if you're right, you get a pair of Tom Segura tickets, who's really funny. But you have to accept that he's working beyond blue.
Yes, he is.
You just have to accept that. If you don't, no prop. He's not your guy. There's plenty of other people out there. But if you like him, it's worth paying attention. I hope you listen anyway, but bumper music theme, a pair of good tickets for the April 18th show at the X. You feeling good about this bumper music theme?
I just hope the boss doesn't come down on me.
Yeah.
Had good success yesterday. I think this one is going to be very tricky.
Among the attacks on my father, let's do this for five and then let's break and get to Major. Ultimate homer. No doubt, but on this radio station, he was not. Because on this radio station, for a number of years, there were a lot of people who sucked their head in the sand. Just to be honest. That when the Gophers were terrible, they would not acknowledge it. And when the Gophers were terrible, my father would call it up. Now, if you then said somebody should be fired, it was, what do you do for a living?
Exactly. Okay, you know, genius.
Yeah, exactly. But compared to people who worked here for a long time, he was objective. Compared to the rest of the population, no, he was absolutely a homer. Today's sports hero. I mean, that was part of this radio station. I can't even imagine how many decades. Minnesota Hospital. Yep. When he tried to pronounce Martina Navratilova. And Tom and KQ had a lot of fun with that, for sure. Every time I think of the Los Angeles Lakers, I think your father. Outside of his family, I know this for a fact, the happiest time of his life. You know, when he was running that and playing a role, they won a lot of championships.
Mm-hmm.
The guy in the middle helped quite a bit. But he made a number of other good moves that were part of it. Love the sports show. See, I'll admit this. I did not love the sports show. I like dark. Love my father. Didn't always agree with my father. I just thought, because I knew more about their tension behind the scenes and how at times they just couldn't stand each other and how I got put in the middle of that at times. I didn't like it as much as others did. I obviously loved Patrick, right? But I totally get that a lot of people were drawn to it for other reasons. And they weren't getting phone calls from the two participants about every other week.
Mm-hmm.
My father and Prince at the Super Bowl. My guy Hagen, who texted me today at about 5:45. outside of me, Lacey and Larissa, his two nurses, the person who saw my father the most the last 3-4 years of his life was Bob Hagen, the greatest media relations director in the history of sports in this state. And my father loved Bob, and Bob is such a gem. And yeah, Bob told that story brilliantly about my father and Prince. Chad, your dad was a working, well-respected member of journalists whose presence was known all over the world. He worked right after the day he died. Yes, he did. When I think of your father, often my mad he would get when he realized about backlash, Morgan and Dane were not real characters. No, that was a bit. He knew that all along. Okay. A lot of kind words about Quentin. I so appreciate that so much. I work at St. David's for many years. He was there one day, and I helped him find his car in a crowded lot. You can imagine his mood. I always appreciate his generosity to the special needs population. Well, that's because of Quentin. Quentin was at St. David's for another years. An amazing place, St. David's. Just an amazing place. And he was, our family was part of it for a long time. So, yes, because of Q, that was a huge part of his life. Let's do this. Let's save many of these. We'll get back to it. When you think of my father, what memories come to mind? 651-461-9226. Let's get to our friend Major Garrett in moments on CCO. Wow. Just acknowledging he's making billions of dollars. Wow. I mean, this is fact-based here. This is what this show is all about, Dave Aragon, right? Fact-based reporting.
Well, news industry's never paid more than they do today, from what I'm told.
Yes, that is exactly right. So we just were making fun of Adam Carden. Grunhoffer's is a great place in town where you pick up a variety of meats. What kind of griller is Major Garrett? You know, if it's like today, it's beautiful. We've had just an amazing run of weather. So we've had plenty of grilling opportunities. You have a 12,000-square-foot mansion in Alexandria, Virginia. You have four or five different patios.
We go over this all the time.
I'm sorry, 13,000 square foot.
I have an apartment in downtown Washington, D.C.
Sure, sure.
932 square feet, no balcony, no grilling space at all.
That's what we think of that statement.
Currently, I am not a griller of any kind. Currently.
Yep.
I have a history of grilling, and I do what most people do, you know. Burgers, hot dogs, chicken, a little bit of fish, but not much.
Now, do you put like a hat on? Do you have like an apron that says "Kiss the Chef"? I mean, do you do that?
No.
Can we get a picture? Like Dave, Dave, do you see that Major Kiss the Chef walking around?
No.
We can Photoshop that.
We can Photoshop. We're gonna Photoshop that on the tweet today.
No grills. I gotta have fun. None of that. No.
I wasn't familiar with that one. Were you, Dave?
That must be an East Coast thing.
Girls just got to have fun. That's outstanding.
No.
Okay. I'm going to guess, Dave, I'm going to say meat. He's a medium guy. He's a medium, but closer to a medium rare guy than a medium well. Dave, what's your guess?
He's definitely not a well done. He's got much better taste than that.
Yeah. Where are you at?
So I would say when I cook it, and because the three of us who are speaking are all gentlemen of a certain age, medium means what medium meant when we were young. However, if you go to a fine restaurant in America today, medium doesn't mean what it meant when you and I, the three of us, were young. Medium now means medium rare, and I don't like medium rare.
Wow.
I like medium. The old medium.
You're like a hockey puck, in other words. Is that what you're suggesting?
No, just a hint of pink in the center. But I don't want it running around my plate, which is what medium is now.
You don't want the cow running around saying, come and get me. I mean, come on.
You watch any cooking show, and all the chefs are like, it's running over the plate. It's a little overdone.
Hmm. Taking on big chefs.
That mentality has infected restaurants across the country. So if you say medium, you're not going to get the medium that I grew up with. You're going to get medium rare, and I don't like medium rare.
Mm. Dave, thoughts?
I am not as old as the two of
you. Yeah, exactly.
Calm down.
Yeah, by the way. That was his number one takeaway. We are notably older. He does not want to be positioned.
Okay. Ages. Okay, great. Thanks. Thanks for that, Dave. Yeah. You take your ageism and you go all over the Twin Cities. Yes. Have fun with that.
Here's what Dave. Here's what Dave's prepared to say. Major, can you hear me?
Yes. Okay.
Someone who will not be celebrating another birthday, and I'm not broken up at all about it, is the former leader of Hamas, Sinwar. Pretty amazing reporting, too, how with all the high intelligence from our country and Israel, how they found him almost accidentally, you know, on a normal mission. It wasn't, we've got Sinwar here, they killed him, came back and went, my God, look at who we killed. But he is now dead.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of questions about what this means. You know, the President of the United States saying in a statement that the White House put out yesterday and then his own words today, I hope this is an opportunity for peace, and acknowledging he encouraged that when he chatted with Bibi Netanyahu. Tom Friedman, who is more well-versed on the Middle East than anyone on this planet, with a great column in the New York Times today, laying out a plan, and Tom Friedman speaking optimistically about this opportunity to not only have a ceasefire, but potentially would Netanyahu listen to some sort of multifaceted two-state solution with multiple countries involved, in particular Saudi Arabia. I hope that happens, Major, but this is Hamas. This is a despicable organization. And my gut tells me they're going to try to revenge his death in any way possible, which would lead to an end of this opportunity. What, judging everything you've consumed, what is your sense on where we're going?
I do think there is an opportunity. My experience as a reporter who's covered presidential engagements in the Middle East since I started covering the White House in 2000, covering Bill Clinton, lengthy negotiations, not to back then achieve a separate Palestinian state because that wasn't U.S. policy, but to soften the blows and to minimize the sense of occupation and try to create something that was equitable and peaceful. Every American president I've covered has been frustrated by missed opportunities, things that look promising, but in the end don't fulfill anywhere close to their promise. However, this is a different dynamic right now. Hamas fighters have been decimated in the ground invasion of Gaza by Israel. Many other civilians have lost their lives as well. But Hamas as a fighting force is decimated. Its leadership is decimated. Its ability to intimidate slash terrorize Palestinians in Gaza significantly undermined. What does that mean in Gaza? What does that mean in the West Bank? Is there an ability of Palestinians who, if offered something from Israel, moving in the direction of a two-state solution, would free themselves of Hamas? That's an opportunity, but it has to be pursued by the Israelis. And to make it real, other Arab states, probably led by Saudi Arabia, need to be there immediately with not just diplomatic support and ideological and rhetorical support, but hundreds of millions of dollars of reconstruction support. And one of the things that has always been, and this is one of the bitter truths of this conflict between Israel and the Palestinians, many of the surrounding Arab states talk a good game, but in the end don't deliver.
Yes, correct.
Because, and this is the most cynical interpretation, but the history that I've observed for these 24 years of covering the story, not on a day-by-day basis, but pretty closely, is the Arab states prefer the antagonistic ongoing conflict between Israel more than they prefer an actual two-state solution or Palestinian homeland. And the evidence there is pretty clear.
It's overwhelming, to be honest.
When asked to pony up and to provide either peacekeeping forces or money or diplomats or any combination of those things, the one Arab state that I would say distinguishes itself and been a positive force has been Jordan. Jordan really has worked on this.
Right.
Jordan has taken hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees, let them live in Jordan, is constantly trying to work on this. It's the closest neighbor. But the rest, they sort of take a pass whenever the going gets tough. So this is going to have to be something where lots of other states that have been on the sidelines, talk a good game, but never in the end deliver, have to pony up in many, many ways. And Iran is weakened. Hezbollah is weakened. Hamas is weakened. The Houthis are weakened. All of Iran's ability to sort of menace the whole region and say, we've got all this stuff going for us, has now been revealed to be much less than advertised. So if you want peace on your terms, now is the time to jump in, seize this moment, push Iran back, and redraw, not the map, but redraw the sense of what Iran can or can't do in terms of menacing or intimidating the region.
Two other X factors I'll add, then we'll pause. Netanyahu has a close relationship with Trump.
Yeah.
I think he's going to wait and see what happens in the election.
Yeah.
And the leeway he might get from Donald Trump compared to Kamala Harris. And then you mentioned it, MBS in Saudi Arabia is an X factor here. Because you're right.
Yeah.
They haven't been in the mix. But what role does MBS want to play while still killing individuals in this country on a regular basis, but also trying to modernize at some level and how they were edging towards some sort of agreement with Israel before October 7th?
Oh, they definitely were. They definitely were. And there are some in the region who believe that was one of the reasons that Hamas launched October 7th, because they saw things moving away and the Abraham Accords and all these other arrangements pushing them out. And the scenario only getting worse, and alliances that would make Israel feel more secure and them less secure. If that was the gambit, it was a spectacular failure, because Israel has responded with both military feet and is not turning back, and is, if anything, expanded the battle space into Lebanon, dealt with two attacks from Iran, but basically proven itself capable of absorbing lots of different blows and responding in kind. What the Saudis do is entirely up to them. And Bibi is a survivor. He is the most resilient democratic political survivor in the entire history of Israeli politics. That's a fact. He's also shrewd enough to know that he cannot put all of his eggs in the Trump basket. Because Trump is not a guaranteed winner, not at all. And he's going to have to deal with the U.S. government one way or the other. Yes, Trump will give him more room, but he can't count on that. And I would say all of these various efforts of the last 6 to 8 weeks have been a recognition of that, that if he's going to get some things and accomplish them militarily and strategically, he better do them now. And I think that's been one of the reasons this calendar has played out the way it has.
One last topic. This is Major Garrett. You have interviewed presidents, vice presidents, senators, leaders of other countries. You know when you have to be direct in your question, you need to follow up. And we all have a style and an approach about it. And sometimes that has to adjust pending who you're interviewing. You know Brett Baer as a veteran journalist in D.C. for a long time. What was your assessment of him and your assessment of the vice president in that interview a couple days ago on Fox News?
So for Harris, the fact that the interview happened is the most important moment. Into the lion's den, quote unquote, metaphorically, I'm not afraid. I took it on. I knew it was going to be hostile. I knew I was going to probably be interrupted, but I did it anyway. I've got clips that my fans love and like and will move around in my circles of already convinced voters, and at the margins, I possibly either softened hostility toward me or maybe picked up a vote or two here or there. In the end, the risk-reward worked out better for her. Brett Baer lost my respect when the emails from 2020 came to the surface, and he said that the decision desk, which he knows and I know at Fox, is very good, resilient, and data-driven, should rescind its call in Arizona.
Yes.
Not because it was wrong, but because Fox viewers were upset.
That's documented and proven, by the way, before we get a text.
Yes. It's documented and proven. It's in court filings, and it's not been disputed.
Yep.
That's when Brett and I parted companies journalistically. And so his approach to the vice president reflected that relationship with the Fox audience. And I believe one of the most dangerous things in journalism, and it's a dangerous thing if your network is center-left or center-right, is thinking first of your audience's acceptance of your performance as opposed to the answers you get from a political figure. To me, the most important thing of any interview is the quality of the answers that you get from the questions you ask. Not your attitude, not your demeanor, not your willingness to interrupt. What are the answers, and what do they reveal that people did not know before? That's the only way, to my way of thinking, you measure the quality of an interview.
And, by the way, on the Fox decision to call Arizona for Joe Biden, they were right. They were proven
right.
And over
CBS,
and over
CBS,
again.
CBS didn't do it. We didn't do it. we were late. We were much days later because our modeling wasn't as accurate as Fox's was. And I kept talking to our Anthony Salvanto, head of our elections and surveys. I said, are they probably right? He goes, they probably are. But our modeling will not allow us to make that call. We're going to be more cautious. And that's where we were. But Fox was, in the end, correct. Narrowly, by just over 10,000 votes, but they were right.
Great as always, sir. Enjoy the weekend. Go have that hockey puck next time you go out and eat.
I thank you, sir.
Thank you. Major, as good a guest as you're going to get on radio all across it.